You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson and you're listening to the Food Talk Show. So for the next hour, I'm going to talk about all things food. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, Guy Routledge. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Sue. How are you doing today?
I've recovered from last week, which was essentially
stuffing ourselves for an hour, which is basically what it was.
Yes. And we're joined by three lovely guests, as usual. So I've got Tony Goodman, 10 Acre Snacks, and Daniel Porson of Seed Chips. So it's going to be interesting because you're sort of in the same category. So it'll be interesting to see.
But there is a bit of a twist on this one, which you'll have to keep listening to find out exactly what that is.
But it'll be interesting to see what you think of each other's products. And then Mirella Sula, who is like world-renowned, amazing woman who runs Global Women. And we're going to have a little chat about some of the work that you do too. Starting off, Tony, 10 Acre. They're just everywhere at the moment. You just seem to be in everywhere. Even when I've just popped out for a little bit of lunch and there you are, 10 Acre again.
I'm delighted to hear it. And I hope you keep enjoying them and having them for lunch, dinner, breakfast and any other meals in between.
I'm not sure about breakfast and dinner and lunch and all the meals in between, but a great snack.
So if anybody doesn't know about 10 Acre, I think you started with 10 Acre Crisps. That was your first product.
We did. We launched them March 2014 and then the popcorn we launched early 2015. And this year we've launched Bean and Pod Chocolates.
Yes, that's another departure. Mm. We'll go on to that in a minute. Why on earth would anybody go into the crisp sector when it is incredibly overcrowded? Or was it not overcrowded then?
It was overcrowded, but the main crowding we felt were not products that were hitting the spot. So we saw a gap in the market for a real premium product that also met all dietary needs. So everything we produce in 10 Acre, we call it free from plus. So it has to be great tasting, as well as the usual free from gluten, dairy, MSG. Most of them are also allergen free. But then we also decided that they would be vegetarian and vegan, both sectors that have been growing quite quickly.
And halal and kosher.
Well, it's ticking all the boxes. Impressive.
We had James Averdeek on the programme a few months ago who started Goo and now has gone on to the Coconut Collaborative. And he is very, very experienced, as you can imagine. He sold Goo for I don't know how much.
32 million, I think it was.
Obviously he knows what he's doing. What he was saying is he felt that really was the sector to be in, not actually in ice creams and yogurts, which is what he's doing, but in the free from plus is what he thought, and now he really knows what he's doing and he sees that as what you need to be now if you're going to be successful.
Well, hopefully he's completely right and I would agree with him. We did a lot of research before we started and firstly there was a strong move to premium products in food generally, which has continued, but we could also see coming across the Atlantic from particularly from the US a significantly higher level of demand for free from foods. And the vegetarian and vegan movements have also been moving quite quickly. So we're now seeing growth in those that is quite exceptional in some ways from a very low base, but now becoming significant, and not just in this country, but across the world. And we designed 10 Acre from ground up to be a product that we would look to export around the world.
And this isn't necessarily people that are being vegan all the time. It's or vegetarian. It's people who are choosing that maybe just for lunch or maybe, you know, during the week or something.
I think November the 1st was World Vegan Day, and this is World Vegan Month. So there's an awful lot in the news about vegans, and not everyone is a vegan permanently, but people are trying to move that way. They sometimes find it more difficult than other diets, than a vegetarian diet, for instance, but they're looking to move that way. And there are a lot of people that are committed to a much cleaner diet But they still want snacks. They still want fun food. They don't want boring food. And that was the biggest problem with all Free From. We actually employed...
A bit sort of earnest, in a way.
I think the word was tasteless.
The texture is the thing that always used to get me. I mean, I went gluten-free for a while for medical reasons, not just on a whim. And I found that there was everything out there that you would have normally eaten as a non-gluten-free person, like all the cakes and all that kind of stuff. But that was all there was. It was, you go to the Free From aisle and it was just,
it's not difficult doing cakes that are gluten-free, though, to be fair. I
mean, well, most of them have got flour in, so there is a challenge there. But it was all just, you know, tasteless, as you said, Tony, and the texture was just all wrong as well. But I think it's got a lot better.
I think it has. We actually have in the company two people who are celiacs. So we learn an awful lot about what's going on in the market.
They're down A&E all the time because you test it and it doesn't quite work.
Well, no, not joking, certainly not. Joking. We always provide them with something that they can eat. But you see the sort of struggles that they have when out and about. And the biggest complaint was that Free From had a reputation for being tasteless. Now, that's completely changed. Yeah. And one of the biggest things, I think, is actually in bread, where Free From... gluten-free bread has now crossed into the mainstream. And this is what's
such
happening.
A hard technical thing to do, though. I mean, I was saying about cakes, and but in comparison to bread, that actually is easier to do in terms of gluten-free, isn't it?
Well,
but
bread is this wonderful chemical reaction with the salt and the yeast and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there are so many different things you can do with it, but it's that kind of fine chemistry that you have to get right. Otherwise, you end up with something a bit flat and a bit crap.
Mm. You're allowed to say that on the radio, probably not. Anyway, so you were saying, you know, a sort of a bit earnest and tasteless and whatever. Your sort of range of crisps, we're going to popcorn in a minute. You've got 10 delicious flavours, and they are fun. They're great fun. And did you decide that right from the beginning?
Absolutely. And we wanted everything we do to be fun. Life is too short to be earnest. So out of the 10 flavours, 5 of them are standard flavours because everyone still loves those. So ready salted, salt and vinegar, cheese and onion, sweet chilli, black pepper. But 5 are unique flavours, and they are unique around the world. So chicken soup, pastrami and rye, sweet and sour, Bombay spice, hickory barbecue. So flavours from around the world that you don't necessarily expect to get in a crisp. But even with things like our cheese and onion or the chicken soup or the pastrami, they're all vegan as well. So they're still suitable for everyone.
So your crisp flavour is called How Chicken Soup Saved the Day. I mean, it's not just called Chicken Soup Flavour Crisp,
I love the fun there. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. And you're in the office, in our studio here, you know, and you're a jolly-looking person, aren't you? You're very smiley, you know, with a beard and whatever. And you know, that feels like your personality is coming out in your crisps.
It's certainly and the name my interest. We wanted it to be different, and we wanted to have a story behind every one. So we put a story title on the pack. And if you go on our website, you can read the stories that go behind them about the characters that live in the fictional world of 10 Acre. So each of the Chris story titles is about one of the characters or several characters that live in the village.
Brilliant.
I thought that was real, Tony.
Sebastian Salt is the mayor. And the popcorn flavours are also very interesting because they're all about members of Cornelius Popley's family who live in Popley House where the popcorn orchards are. And obviously there's the regular harvest that you can become a resident of 10 Acre. You can sign up on the website to become a resident and join in all the fun.
Brilliant. It's just mad. It's just so mad.
Brilliant, but bonkers, we like to say around here.
I have to tell you, we have our offices are called 10 Acre House, and we have a barred room, which is, of course, the town hall. And on Friday, we welcomed new Minister of State for trade and export promotion, Baroness Fairhead, to our offices. So we even get government ministers coming to 10 Acre.
And joining in the fun.
Absolutely.
Now, we've got some popcorn in front of us. I've got 3 packets. Now, just carrying on this flight of fancy, which you've got to buy into, you've just got to go with it. So I have got, and Morella's sitting here, she hasn't had any lunch, so you're going to have to taste some of this, Morella. We've got Cousin Penelope's strawberry and cream popcorn.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not normal, is it? Strawberry and cream popcorn. And why branching out into popcorn? Was that something that you're seeing as a trend and thinking, well, we've done crisps, actually we can do popcorn. Try these, Morella.
We actually had a plan from the very beginning that did include Chris and popcorn and chocolates and other things. So we're not saying that we're finished yet.
Okay, sorry, I'm sorry to laugh. I'm eating Cousin Maisie's fennel and lemon popcorn.
Sounds like an interesting combination.
Should we give a feedback at the end?
What's the strawberries and cream popcorn like?
Yeah, well, because I'm hungry, I'm really enjoying it, but it looks like it's really nice. Mm. I didn't expect it to be so sweet.
If you actually smell it, you'll find that it smells like strawberry and cream as well.
Yeah, it does.
Oh my God, it does.
It's crispier than I thought it would be as well, actually.
Yeah.
Because normally a lot of time popcorn's a bit softer, isn't it?
When we aim for that premium product, both with Chris and with popcorn, we want it to include not just flavour, but also texture. Because particularly if you're going to have premium food, you don't want to just absorb massive quantities. You want something that's going to please all the senses. And so potentially, and this goes for the chocolates as well, potentially have something where you go for quality, not quantity. But with 10 Acre, one of the things we've always aimed to do is to produce the products at a very accessible price. So in most shops, you'll find these at the same price as the market leading products that are not free from, that are not hand cooked, that are not. So, you know, we're not looking to charge a massive premium for our products.
They have got that real crispness, haven't they? Don't you think? I'm just
crispier than a normal popcorn. Yeah, it's the first time I tried them, actually. And it is a lot of difference to what I thought.
They're quite nice, aren't they, Daniel? Because I don't generally go for popcorn because I find it a bit clanky.
I'm a popcorn fan, actually. I really like it. I've not tried these before, but the flavours are incredibly strong in a way that is surprising from as being a popcorn person. Normally you just get, you know, there's a little hint of something somewhere. But how do these work? Because, I mean, I'm tasting the strawberries and cream one at the moment, and it's, like most seasonings, it's kind of like a dust. So do you take fresh ingredients and like make them into powders, or how does the flavouring work?
That's effectively how it works. And we go for flavours because we don't want to have artificial preservatives and all the rest of it. Of course, one of the oldest artificial or oldest preservatives we do have, particularly in the crisps, which is salt. There is some, but we go for authenticity in the flavours as much as possible. Yeah. At the same time, making sure that they meet all the free-from criteria.
And you say on here, the popcorn orchards.
Yes.
Is this part of your little wonderland?
Of course.
Up in wherever it is.
Have you not seen popcorn growing on trees?
No.
Well, you can if you look at the front of the 10-acre packs, because there's a beautiful illustration of a tree with popcorn coming out the end of it.
So fantastic. I presume you've got an orchard in 10-acre village then, have you?
Absolutely.
And the popcorn just falls off.
You go, there's actually, if you go and read the stories on the website, you'll see that there's some methodology to how you harvest the popcorn every year.
Of course you do.
And is this all in your offices, so it actually looks like a wonderland when you go in there? Or is it still kind of functional like an office?
It's a bit like, it's a bit like sort of, what do you call it, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It's about Mr. Wonka.
There's a little bit of that about it, yeah, for sure.
Do you have Oompa Loompas working there?
We don't. We have a lovely team of people working for them. None of them are Oompa Loompas, but we believe in having some fun. Just because a product is premium doesn't mean that we have to be serious. If food isn't about having some fun, having some enjoyment, then what is it for? If it's just for sustenance, you know, we could all by now just be taking a pill every mealtime.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what would be the point? Most people still want to have an adventure. One of the reasons why so many the number of restaurants around has grown so much is because people are prepared to invest in that enjoyment
and try things
and in the theatre of things. So all we're trying to do is bring that to them wherever they are, whether you're having, you know, the big night in, or you're just having a snack, or you're having some crisps with your lunch, or whatever it is. Why shouldn't you be able to have that element of theatre as well?
And it does come across. I mean, the whole brand, you know, sort of goes across everything really quite nicely, doesn't it? And it's got that tone of voice, and you've got to be really strict about keeping that, haven't you? And to make sure that it all sort of fits together like a jigsaw.
We had fun in the very beginning setting out what that tone of voice was, building the village and deciding, writing the stories and deciding what that characteristic was. And yes, we continued to carry that through. And to an extent, it's a little schizophrenic, because at the same time as there is the surreal world of 10 Acre, there's also the real world of people picking up a product off the shelf who don't necessarily get involved in all that story, who just want a great tasting product, and who won't care whether it's free from or vegan or vegetarian. They just want a great tasting product.
Yeah.
And we want to very much have them as customers and have them happy and justified. And that's where the bulk of our customers are still.
But taste is a given now. You can't have an inferior product anymore, can you? You know, the taste has got to be top notch, no matter what category you're in. And as you say, that's what people buy into. Then if they want to engage with this lovely brand and the stories you've got on your website, they can. But actually, it has to taste good, whatever, come what may.
Absolutely. And 10 of our flavours now have won Great Taste Awards, as well as many other awards. In fact, the strawberry and cream won a massive food award in Belgium. As food innovation of the year product.
Wow.
Not snack innovation, but food innovation of the year product.
Wow.
So we are very much focused on making sure that people have a great experience when they eat them. And it's not just the flavour, it's also the texture and the experience. And if you can bring a smile to someone's face, they're going to enjoy it even more.
Well, you're bringing a smile to my face because you've just launched a popcorn range that's tango flavoured.
Yes.
But there's the fun in the brand again, you know.
Fizzy popcorn.
Fizzy popcorn.
Mm. Fizzy popcorn, orange and apple.
Do you sit in the office and just have sort of weird brainwaves? Or do you just sort of, you know, I don't know, brainstorm between you? Or how do these ideas come out?
They brainstorm between us. I mean, sometimes they're just obvious. And sometimes they come to us in odd places. So I was with one of my business partners. I was with Jimmy in New York and we were in a deli just off Times Square and we were enjoying a meal of pastrami and rye and we thought this would make a great crisp flavour. So
that's it.
We eventually produced it.
Yeah.
That was where the rationale for that was. All of them have an element of the story. The strawberry and cream was very much inspired by Wimbledon. And strawberry and cream and some of the other flavours of popcorn and crisp have been on sale for the championship for the last few years. So, you know, but it's also a great British typical flavour. But beyond that, it's a great flavour. People enjoy it. It brings a smile to the face.
I prefer the slightly more savoury ones, actually. I've just had a bit of your lime and sea salt popcorn. That's nice. That's the sort of thing I like.
And that's actually technically one of the very interesting things. We've got a range of products. And the idea with a range is not that every flavour suits everyone.
Mm.
It's that you've got something that will suit everyone and different people will have their favourites. So my favourite and other people in the company's favourite are not necessarily the same. I mean, my favourite varies from time to time. You know, it's a bit like asking which is my favourite child. Each of my children will tell you that they are my favourite. But
and on one particular day, they'll be in the good books. And one particular day, they'll be in the bad books. You know, that's how it goes.
That's quite possible. But never in the bad books, obviously. Mm. No, but so flavours, you know, there are some flavours that I will have more than others. But everyone will have their own sub-range of flavours. It might just be one, it might be others. And we want to cater for everyone. So, you know, we do have, for instance, in crisps, we have ready salted, which is the biggest selling flavour in the country. Not just of ours,
really?
But nationally. Yeah, ready salted, salt and vinegar, cheese and onion are the three big sellers nationally still.
That really surprises me.
You know, if you have something like hickory barbecue or Bombay spice or pastrami, those are strong flavours that might not attract everyone. But if you're stood at a pub having a pint, I guarantee those are the sort of things that you want to have.
Yeah.
And similarly, in popcorn, sweet and salty is the standard flavour. But you try wasabi popcorn. Unfortunately, we haven't got any here today. And wasabi is a little bit of a Marmite flavour. If you don't like wasabi, you might not like our wasabi popcorn. But if you do like wasabi, I'm pretty confident you'll love
like
our wasabi
popcorn. Yeah.
And again, it's a great flavour if you're having it with a drink or whether it's an accompaniment to a meal or, you know, people these days use popcorn as a dressing on food.
Mm.
As a dressing on a cake or a dessert or whatever, or crush it up, or, you know, and to have that's really got great flavours is what goes down.
I mean, interestingly,
well.
I've got some research here and it says that sales have grown 10% in 2017 to £152 million a year, of popcorn. So it's doubled since 2013, whereas the sales of crisps have gone down. So I think that's quite interesting. But is that because there's more choice now? We just used to have, I'll have a sandwich and crisps, whereas now there's a choice, this sandwich and crisps and popcorn and all these other things.
I think it is very much down to choice and certainly down to variety. When I was younger and not particularly that long ago, the only time you really saw popcorn was when you were at the cinema and you could have salted or not salted. And, you
that
know,
was it really.
Tasted a little bit like cotton wool and, you know, you enjoyed a big bucket or you didn't. The same with crisps. I think what you'll find is that the sales of hand-cooked crisps have grown whilst the sales of traditional have shrunk. A little. It's not a huge amount, but that is the trend. And it's not just in snacks, but it's across the food range that people are moving more and more to premium products.
Yes, I think, I think it depends where you are, but I think they're very discerning. And you can't put, I don't think, nobody's going to put up with something that doesn't taste good anymore. They're just not.
And we're finding the same thing across the world, by the way. It's not just in this country.
Oh, that's interesting. So when did you start 10 Acre Snacks?
We launched the crisps, which was our first product, March 2014.
2014. So,
wow, so it's not been going too long then. It feels much bigger than that.
Yeah. How many staff do you have now?
Not including production, we have 12.
So that's a lot of wages to pay every week, a lot of popcorn and crisps to
absolutely.
Get rid of. So what sort of capacity are you at now in terms of what you produce?
The capacity can expand, and we have expanded since we started. We've still got plenty of growth left in us, and we're seeing a large amount of growth both in this country and particularly overseas. Our exports now account for about a third of our turnover, but we're looking for that to grow to 50%, even as we continue to grow in the UK.
But are you producing tens of thousands of bags a month, or you must be? Probably more than that, hundreds of thousands. It's interesting to be doing a tactic in business sense of overseas. Was that deliberate? Just not going for the national market, but deliberately going abroad?
Yes, it was. And our logic was very much that if you're going for a premium market, that is not the whole market. We couldn't compete on the sort of prices that of the price wars in the supermarkets in the snacks brand. And we didn't particularly want to try because it didn't make sense. So what we decided from day one was that we would, when the time was right, and we started in 2015, we'd look to export markets, to the premium end of export markets. And it may be surprising to a lot of people just how many places have premium markets. But to give you an we actually recently launched something called the 200 Export Club, which is to talk about the opportunities for British company to export. And that has absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. Brexit has highlighted the fact that we do not, as a country, export enough. So to give you an idea, World Bank figures from 2016 show that we exported 28% of GDP. The European average was 43%, Germany 46%, Denmark 53%, Netherlands 81%. We were the leaders in international trade, and the 200 Export Club goes back to a guy called David Ricardo, a Londoner, who developed the theory of competitive advantage, which is the basis of international trade to this day. And 200 years ago, this year, we led the global international trade. Now, why don't we anymore? It's a very good question that I can't answer. Hmm. I think people think that it's much more difficult than it actually is.
Exporting, they just think it's fraught with difficulty.
So we designed this in from ground up. But to give you an example of the opportunity, everyone knows that the market in China is growing rapidly. The premium market is now thought to be approaching 5% of the population in China.
Wow.
That is more people than live in the UK.
That's huge, isn't it? Absolutely huge.
And that's the premium market. So, you know, and there is, this is happening across the world. We are now exporting to more than 45 countries, including China, Japan, South Korea, Singapore, several countries in the Middle East, Europe, North America, Africa even. There is a lot of opportunity for that quality food around the world.
Mm. And Mirella Sula from Global Women, you help a lot of refugees who come over to the UK, and you do all sorts of stuff all around the world, I know, but trying to help them to get jobs and trying to help them to start businesses. They must be really well placed, actually, to start a business here and do the export side, as Tony's saying, because they might know their home markets, or they might know that sort of area or something.
Well, that is the work that we do with migrant women, because yep. Global Women is a different company. They are two very different companies. We work mainly with Global Women and with many countries. Very inspiring to hear Tony, how did he had the courage to go beyond the country and see, because there are a lot of people, customers ready to buy your product, and probably you don't see that appetite where you are. So I really resonate what he said. With the work that we do with Global Women, then we try also to help some other women that they come here, they start their life from scratch.
Literally from scratch.
Yes. Yeah. So, but my focus actually in the last couple of years has been in empowering women, migrants and non-migrants and British and non-British. So we are now in 14 countries. Mm. And we have created clubs on these countries and they are business clubs. We have breakfast together, by the way. The way we tempt women to come and join
you should be offering free popcorn from 10 acres.
That's what you should be doing. I was thinking about that, absolutely.
Very good idea.
Because the way we tempt women to come and join our meetings is we invite them for breakfast, and we say we have a very nice, delicious food, and it's very warm, and the love starts from the stomach. So, and the whole idea of Global Women is we share a lot of love. We involve women in our kind of global community now, with the idea that we need more support and lifting up each other, and they have a very loving environment when they feel accepted.
A lot of women are really good at food, though, and we were just talking before we went on air to Tony and saying, there should maybe, food industry, food sector is a good place for women to be, and you're saying there's a lot of women already in the sector, aren't there? Isn't there, Tony? And doing really good stuff.
Absolutely. We see an awful lot of people generating their own businesses, coming up with their own ideas. I mean, the area that we work in is mainly smaller companies, and whenever we're at exhibitions, that's what we see, and we see a huge number of female entrepreneurs coming up with ideas wherever it is, and now getting out there. It's very difficult for me as a man to say this, but I don't see barriers to women becoming an entrepreneur any more than there are for men anymore this country.
One of the things I've got a problem with, though, Tony, is that, 7% of angel investors, only 7% of what angel investors give into new companies goes to women. 93% from angel investors go to men. Mm-hmm. There's something wrong with that, actually, because there's no reason why women's, ideas or whatever aren't as good. And because so many angel investors are guys, I think they're a bit blind and probably not doing it on purpose. But, if only 7% of their money is going to women, that's pretty rubbish, really.
I completely agree. But how many women are applying for that money?
I have to tell. I applied four or five years ago, and I tried. And now I am in a position that I have people approaching me. They want to invest. And it's
so annoying.
It's really, what a nice feeling. Knowing that you are 100% owner of what you have built. Mm. If I didn't have that support when I started, I just want to keep it.
Be giving that equity away. I mean, I think you're right, though, Tony. I think women possibly lack confidence in going through it. But I think there's a lot of research to show that if you've got a mixed board, if you've got a mixture of people, which I'm sure you have in your factory in your 10 acres, you're going to get better ideas. You're going to get better cross-fertilisation, and that's not just about women and men, that's about being racially diverse, actually having different ages. And then you get some real sparky ideas going, don't you, when you've got that mixture?
Yes, you do. And I think that the food industry particularly is an area where there are fewer barriers for women to enter. I'm sure there are some industries where there are more barriers. I don't know. But in the food industry, I don't see them, because a lot of food businesses actually start in the kitchen. They start as very small
operations.
Literally. And that's accessible for anyone. I've come across a lot of food businesses that have started on a part-time basis where people are selling their produce in local markets, and then there's a liking for it and they look to grow, and you know, one way or another they find a way. Now, that angel investment isn't yet meeting that is their problem, mm-hmm. and they're losing out. Mm-hmm. They should be looking out for it more. I do think that angel investment, a lot of angel investment, is still very limited in the way it's applied, and maybe that needs opening up more.
Perhaps they just want to back horses that are nearly won already. You know, maybe that's how they minimise their risk. Possibly.
I don't know enough about that market. No. But I do think that the food business is one where you see an awful lot of women entrepreneurs, and I don't see the same restrictions as perhaps there are in others. Other industries.
Mm. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break now. And then I'm incredibly intrigued, Daniel. So that's Daniel Pawson of Sea Chips, to taste your, are they called crisps?
Well, we call them sea chips, but salmon skin crisps is the
Salmon name. Skin crisps.
Well, we were thinking about salmon scratchings, but we've stuck
salmon
with...
scratch. Not sure about salmon scratchings, yes. And Tony, you're interested to try these, aren't you?
Certainly am.
You certainly am. Okay, we're going to have a little break, and we've got a pre-record here for a little while, and we'll be back with you in a minute. Hello, Guy Routledge of Food Rush, who's joining me as co-presenter this afternoon at Food Matters Live. What do you know about karma?
Karma? Not a huge amount. I drank a beer called Karma once. That was quite nice.
Isn't karma like you've got to be good because actually something will come and get you if you're not? It's like what would you call it? It's divine retribution if you don't behave yourself.
Something like that, yeah. Isn't it my name is Earl? Isn't that the TV show all about karma? Those are the two facts I have about karma, and I'm out.
So I'm joined by Charlotte Bates. Charlotte, what does karma mean?
Karma to me means basically what you put out there is what you get back. So if you're nice to people and you're nice to animals and things, then you get that back.
So what you reap, what you sow, you will reap.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. So
it's happened to Robert Mugabe at the moment, hasn't it?
Yes. Good example.
Good example. We suddenly found nobody likes him after all.
Yeah, that's right.
He's done quite well for 20 or 30 years or whatever it is. But anyway, so we've got your product here, which is called Good Karma. I'm presuming that it's called Good Karma because that's very much sort of how you live your life and what you believe in.
Yes, it is. And also, if you've noticed, it's Karma with a C, not a K. That's because my name's Charlotte, and also I live in Carmarthenshire in West Wales, so it's the first five letters of the county of Carmarthenshire.
All very clever. Now, that's West Wales, so you drive to Bristol, and then you sort of go across the bridge thing, and then you drive all along that, go past Cardiff, and then you keep going, and you keep going, and you think you're going to hit the end of the world. And there is the most beautiful coastline along there, isn't there?
Yes, it's very, very beautiful, and I feel very lucky to live there. And it's a very healing kind of area as well, because of just the natural beauty that there is there. And there's obviously, I live quite near to the Preseli Mountains as well, relatively, and that's where the bluestones came from, or that's where they say the bluestones came from, and there's a definite energy there.
And so it's the most beautiful place. I'm presuming that there's loads of hidden little tiny food producers who are using the land and natural resources around there and producing some incredible stuff that we probably don't hear about.
No, that's very true. I've been lucky because there's lots of friends that are doing it as well, lots of producers around by me. But I've only been really noticed since I've been coming to big events in London, because you just don't, as coming with a Welsh food and drink, you get noticed, and they're really helpful because the government actually help you with getting, paying subsidies to be able to be here, basically. And
showcasing what Wales has to offer.
Yeah, which we've now kind of become getting on the map as far as food producers are concerned, which without them they wouldn't be able to do that.
And of course Wales is a great cheese producing region, isn't it?
Yes, and hence why I do, mine are plant-based cheeses, but I've now kind of, that's where I've come from with it, is there's lots and lots of beautiful cheeses out there.
Ireland produces some great cheeses as well, of course, and Scotland, so all across the wider UK. So you're a cheese fan, aren't you?
I am a cheese fan. I think probably one of my favourite shows that we've ever done was with La Fromagerie
with Patricia Michael Munn. That was a great. That was my favourite probably programme ever.
It was brilliant, and I do love a bit of cheese. I was down in Cornwall recently, and we had a bit of local cheese down there as well. But yeah, I've been studying the packaging in front of me. We've got three kind of cylindrical tubes of things, and this is dairy-free cheese.
Dairy-free cheese. Well, I might have to be persuaded here, Charlotte. So I'm going to. Can I open this one? So if I open this middle one, it's a purple packaging. It's original. There we go, Guy. You have a go at that. So what is it exactly that I have in front of me?
Parmesan alternative, and that is the original one, and that's based with almonds, Himalayan pink salt, nutritional yeast flakes of added B12, and then basil. I've just this year won a Freeform Food Awards with it. In the innovation section as well, so it's gluten free.
I'm just having a taste of that. Can you have a taste of that? What would you use it for?
That one in particular is for pasta dishes, so it's your Italian kind of Parmesan alternative. So it's used for spaghetti bolognese, and you can use it in lasagnas. You can use it pre-cooking, in between cooking, and after cooking.
I have to admit that I have never tasted a dairy-free cheese that I've liked. I'm being totally honest here, because of naturally what it is. However, some people can't eat dairy, and of course they love cheese. And where do you go? Now you've just had a taste of that. So just to describe it, it's grated like you would, you know, grate Parmesan. So it's, you know, as you would put that on top of a spaghetti bolognese. What do you think, Guy?
Yeah, so it is. It doesn't taste like cheese, but you wouldn't expect it to because it's got no dairy in it. It's like a very fine powder. So it's actually very similar to some of that terrible fake Parmesan, which is actually made of, you know, it's got dairy products in it. So that very fine dust. But the thing that's brilliant about this is that it's really packed with flavour, and that's exactly what you want on the top of your pasta, or, you know, running through your spaghetti bolognese or something.
I think that is slightly cheesy.
No, it is. It's got that really kind of umami kind of thing going on. But that's what you need. It doesn't have to taste like cheese. You just need one of those nice strong flavours to come in. But I guess the question that springs to mind is, what is it that makes it in any way cheese-like?
Yeah, how do you do that?
It is the nutritional yeast flakes that I use, and they have added B12 in, so that if you're vegetarian or vegan, you get your B12, which you can only get through eating red meat, basically. So it's the yeast flakes, it's the inactive yeast flakes that give you the cheesy flavour.
Wow, I've just tasted that. I was very sceptical. Sorry, Charlotte. I was entirely sceptical there.
It's really good. And tangy is exactly the word to use, because it's got that really nice kind of, you know, I'm lost for words today. It's terrible. I shouldn't really be on the radio at all.
It's got a great taste award.
It has got a great taste.
So that absolutely shows that it's okay as a thing on its own.
Thank you. Yeah, it's taken me, as I said, 18 months to get that flavour and to get the texture as well. And I went for the Grace Taste Award because my husband said, go on, give it a go. And I was like, no, I don't think so, because it's food critics and they just get a teaspoon given to them with no packaging, nothing. And there's 13,000 applicants, and I was shortlisted to the last 3,000, and then I got the star then for my spread sensation. But it was a blind test with the people, so it wasn't like my friends and family saying to me, oh, it tastes really nice, grinning at me. It was actually people that don't know me.
Well, Charlotte, I mean, well done. If anybody's vegan, desperately, desperately missing cheese, you need to go and find out about Good Karma. So that's Good Karma, and Karma is spelled Carma. And I presume we can go onto your website, which is goodkarmafoods.com. Goodkarmafoods.com. Can people get stuff online?
Yes, you can buy directly online from me. Alternatively, it has just launched with Suma Distributors and the Health Store Distributors and Marigold Health Food Distributors in London, and also Queenswood as well. So it's now all over the country in various different health food shops. And I've also found out yesterday that a shop in Paris is now stocking it.
Even the French.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, brilliant job, and wish you all the best with the, you know, the future line of products, and more taste awards to come, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for joining us, Charlotte.
That's a pleasure. Thank you.
There we go there. So welcome back. We're in the studio. Mirella Sula's eating all the popcorn. She's nearly lunch and she's starving. And we've been talking to Tony Goodman of 10 Acre Snacks. And Tony's obviously quite experienced in the crisp world. And in front of us, I've just emptied a packet. I've just smacked Tony's hands because he's in there already trying to eat them. You're not allowed to eat them yet, Tony. And these are sea chips. And Daniel Pawson has just emptied these onto the table. And they don't look like what I expected. So describe
what a lot of people say that, but then I think, you know, it is literally salmon skin. So,
yeah, so what do you expect? Yeah. What were you thinking?
You do get slightly different shades. So, you know, we use the whole part of the skin. So we got the belly, the top of it. So, you know, we use kind of a couple of different types of salmon as well. So each pack will look, you know, slightly different. When you've got the flavoured ones, the kind of, you know, the lime and chilli, they've got almost, you know, a reddy brownie shade from the chilli. So you all look a bit different, but this is our first flavour that we released. So it's our kind of hardcore kind of initial right. For the fans, that one.
So you've been in the food and drink industry for 8 years and you've launched three companies to date, but now you're focusing entirely on sea chips. And that's because that's quite often a wasted food product. Mm-hmm. It goes to waste as opposed to being used, whereas actually mm-hmm. there's quite a lot of nutrients in there, isn't there?
Yeah, so initially, basically, a few years ago, we work in a restaurant, so me and my co-founder, and we started to just, we'd throw them away, and then we kind of thought, well, let's try and do something with it. So we did a few processes, we'd bake them, we tried frying them, dehydrating them, and we'd put them on dishes or use them as canapes, and customers would be like, well, these are amazing, like, you should sell them. So anyway, fast forward a couple of years, and I'd come back from London from doing a different business, and we did a bit more work on it. We got some nutritional analysis and it kind of came back. You know, it's got omega-3. It's incredibly high in protein. So there's 39.1 grams of protein per 100 gram, which is, you know,
huge. Yeah.
A lot. I mean, a lot of the kind of protein products on the market don't even have that much and they're kind of artificially made.
So shall we tuck in? Right, go on then, Tony. Go for it now.
So yeah, this is just
seasoned. So I'm looking at them now. They look a little bit like, I would say, they're slightly like quavers. Some of them, so they're quite puffed up in a way.
Yeah.
And some of them are slightly black because they're that side of the skin and some of the other side of the skin. I'm going to eat one now. I can't talk and eat at the same time. Tony, would you like to make a comment?
Well, first thing to say, there's a very strong aroma coming off them. They're very crispy, not particularly dense, and a very strong salty flavour, I guess, from the sea.
I'm getting
leaves a strong salty aftertaste.
I can see those as canapes or
like a garnish, like something to like get a bit of texture on the top of something.
So if you had a really fancy meal, I can see that being on the side.
It's a bar snack as well, so with this flavour especially, kind of if you have a beer next to it, it's also a salty snack. You know, it's like an alternative to pork scratching, lighter, more nutritious.
Do you know? I don't know what to say.
It's a really controversial. No, it's like a controversial product. It gets people talking. So this one, when we released this, people were like, "You kind of love it or hate it." But then we kind of released
after popcorns.
Try it, Mirella.
That's how we released the salt and vinegar and the lime and chili because it kind of took away any fishiness from it. So you will get a bit of fishiness with that. But with the salt and vinegar and the lime and chili, you don't because it kind of masks it, I guess you could say. So you still get those nutritional benefits, but just not.
I don't.
So this is just salted,
know what
is it?
Say.
Sorry, this is just sea salt.
This
is
just sea salt. So it's literally three ingredients. It's, you know,
I'm not
salmon
sure
skin,
I'd
sea
have
salt,
those, you know, for lunch. Oil. You know, if I had a sandwich, and then I thought, I'll have a bag of that. I think this is a different market to that, don't you, Tony?
I think it is, and I think you could see this in a cocktail lounge for people trying something different and wanting a different flavour. I think as a medium to carry flavours.
That's interesting, yeah.
Whether that's the right carrier for the type of flavours that people want will be very interesting to find out.
Using it as a... So for me, what's really important is we're seeing a lot of food rescue, aren't we, Guy? When we look at
food
people like Toast Ale
and
Black Cow Vodka, you know, made out of milk and all that sort of stuff. So there's a real, I suppose, longing for people to see food not being wasted and quite an interest in... food rescue products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that we've we've seen again and again on the show. Some really interesting people doing really interesting things and taking, you know, what is a waste product and kind of giving it a new lease on life. Yeah, hugely important. Where do you get the skins from? Do they come from commercial kitchens or they're from farms?
Fishmongers, yeah. So basically when we got in touch with fishmongers, they were, you know, they're quite curious to why we wanted them because they normally throw them away. But when doing more research into it, we found, you know, it's a staple snack in Asia. It is actually getting really very popular in the US. There's a company called Irvin's who are doing it with a salted egg, which is even more extreme flavor-wise. Wow. So we kind of, because we knew the product was so different, we couldn't do crazy flavors like 10 acre because it would just alienate people too much. So we had to go, right, well,
because, you know, do you mean because it's hard enough to understand what the product is in the first place, let alone adding another layer onto
so
that? Yeah.
If we just kind of stuck with traditional flavors that everyone loves, like salt and vinegar, and especially fish and vinegar is a kind of classic combination. Sure.
Absolutely.
I wish I had one with you, with me. But that is just, it's like a fish and chip shop flavor. So we knew we had to kind of stick with flavors that everyone knows. And yet they've been doing well.
And what's the process for actually cooking them? Because they are incredibly crispy, but incredibly light as well.
Yeah, so it's a couple of processes. We get the skins in, we check them over, give them a wash. We then boil them for a few seconds. That kills any bacteria and it just softens them as well. We then dehydrate them for many hours until they're kind of like brittle. And in Asia, that's actually when they'd start to, well, serve them, have them. Mm. And we kind of took a little bit further and we played around. If you pop them just like in the little thin layer of oil, the kind of reaction between a little bit of moisture in the dehydrated skin and the oil just kind of makes them puff up slightly, so you get a really light, crisp flavor.
I think I don't know what to say because it is
because it's different. So unique and different. Yeah,
it is different, and so I'm trying in my head's trying to process.
But it is also quite a distinctive flavor and quite a strong flavor as well. So it, you know, and coming after something that's maybe more common, like popcorn. Mm-hmm. Not to say that your popcorn is common, Tony.
Or that you're common, Tony.
Or that you're common. we'll leave that for Sue. very, very different flavour. I can imagine challenging to, you know, to get to the masses.
So we thought it would be more challenging. When we went to tastings, you know, 85% of people really like them. And, you know, hence we got the listings in Harrods rolling out into Whole Foods. And that's kind of within a couple of months of launching, so I think it's people have taken it on a lot more or quicker than we thought. You know, it hasn't really been much convincing in terms of packaging. We keep it quite
the packaging is nice. I do like the packaging.
Very simple, very classy, high end.
Just from going into kind of shops, there's everyone's kind of saying, you know, that this, the high in protein, that no carbs, and all getting a bit kind of gimmicky. So once kind of like slick it all back and just. You see CC chips, you recognize that, and you kind of know what we do. We know what we're about. We know we're an honest product, you know, all natural ingredients.
Any thoughts from you? Travel a lot, Mirella. Any thoughts from you? It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Well, if you like fish, definitely it's nice. And I like fish. I have replaced meat with fish, so it's very, very nice for me. I would be a very good customer of this. I like it.
That's one customer.
There you go.
Yeah. And also inspired me how much you can do going out of the box and seeing the opportunities there. That probably they have been there all the time, but once you come to know these kind of stories, then you just start thinking and processing that there's so much out there that you can do. Yeah.
But Tony,
very creative.
From your perspective, this would be an export product, wouldn't it? Quite easily, I would say. I mean, you were talking about Southeast Asia.
Yes, definitely. And I think there's an opportunity with so many products to find export markets for them that may well be bigger than the home market. Mm. You have to try. It's never easy, but it's not easy getting any listing anywhere, including in this country.
See, for me, I was thinking about, you know, Spain and Portugal, where you've got salt cod, which, you know, is a traditional thing. Loads of Spanish and Portuguese families have salt cod all the time. And yet the British have never, ever adapted to it, ever. Even though, you know, we have cod and we like cod in all sorts of ways. We never do salt cod. I can see that being really popular in sort of Spain and Portugal, actually. I think it would have to have a different name, but, you know.
I think, the British market probably is a slightly harder market to go into straight away. I mean, we are quite fussy about our fish, which is strange for a country that is surrounded by water. But other countries like Spain, they're a lot more kind of, even China, you know, this is kind of something they've had before. So they're not, or Scandinavia as well.
And
you
they're happier with stronger fish flavours, where I think we're pretty we're pretty weak.
A lot of the fish that we catch, the commercial fishermen go out there and they throw a lot of it back.
Yeah. Or export it.
Half of all the seafood caught in the UK gets thrown to waste, basically.
And I can certainly see this going down very well in Scandinavia, where everything revolves around fish. If you stay in a Scandinavian hotel, the breakfast there will include up to a dozen different types of herring. and salmon is a staple as well. So introducing something like this could go down very well there. Mm. How much of the UK market it will attract, because it is different. And there's always a reluctance to try new things in this country. It's great when you go out to tastings, but getting people to just try them off the shelf is always more difficult. We certainly found that. But I can see places in the world where it would go down very well.
And one of the things we were talking about last week on the show is that somehow it's much harder to launch a product that can't be categorised. In some respects, it's good because you've got no competitors. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, do we put it in the crisp aisle? Do we put it in the snack aisle?
Do we put it in sometimes?
You know, and it becomes sometimes it's a bit difficult to change people's perceptions and things.
At the moment, so for example, in Fenix, they put it next to kind of their seaweed snacks. And you see...
that makes sense.
I'm trying to think, there's another snack as well, Chinese snack. It's getting quite popular. It's like a prawn cracker, kind of like a prawn cracker crisp. But then in Harrods, we've tried it. So we put it on the fish counter as well. So kind of you're buying some fish and you see sea chips. It kind of works. But also kind of as you're kind of checking out as well, it's kind of works there. People are going to see and go, oh, that's interesting, and grab one. Mm. So it's different. You know, obviously we're still kind of learning. So we've tried a few things. But
it's good. Yeah. It's in Harrods. And that's when you started. Yeah, so absolutely. It's looking good.
And what's the future development? Is it more flavours or is it different fish skins?
Definitely different fish skins. In terms of flavours, we'd only plan to add maybe two more. Mm-hmm. So we'd have kind of five altogether. But even then, I'm happy with the three we've got. And then I like to kind of go into a different range of products. So, dips as well, using the often wasted parts, like a tarama salata kind of thing, but kind of a bit more of a British version. So there's a lot of scope for different kind of products within the fish.
Also different challenges as well, with this being a packaged ambient product. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a very different kind of storage and supply chain compared to, say, a fish dip, which is, going to be chilled. So interesting challenges.
Any, we're running out of time already. Any final tips, Tony, that you might help Daniel with?
Really analyse with public testing what your strengths are, and then look for markets where those strengths are required. Mm. So, for instance, one of the things I can see with this, it's recovered food. That will attract a certain element of the market, and you can aim for that. We've already talked about the Scandinavian market and some Asian markets. But with any product that you sell, whether it's food or anything else, you really have to understand what your USPs are and then find the markets that want those. And that's the way to be successful and go out and sell things around the world. Mm. And certainly from an exporting point of view, don't think of it in terms of exporting. Just think of it in terms of selling.
Yeah, absolutely. And Morella, you're a very experienced sort of entrepreneur yourself. Have you got any sort of tips for Daniel as well in terms of how we might market this?
Well, I would say that marketing is very important. The product is really good. So if you be a bit creative and find people that love this, example, you can use me, I can have a video, put it in social media, and say, hey, ladies, have you seen? These are amazing and healthy for your children as well to get at the school, and that they can share it. So do a funny video, and probably that video can go viral, and put it in YouTube and social media and share it. Also, go in the street and find people to do some kind of funny, creative things that can attract people to know what is this first. Oh, famous people that they eat it. Or there are so many ways. Sometimes it's not just about the product. It's about the way you approach people. Because I love both. This really is nice. But in terms of your chips sometimes can replace a meal as well.
Mm. So I guess it's what Tony's been trying to do with 10 Acres, and that is you create a community of people, you know, who buy into your story and interact and with you and engage with you. And it's exactly the same with this, isn't it? It's getting people to interact and engage with you.
Yeah, it's getting people to try it. I think once people try it, you know, they do spread it. It's one of those things, we've just been put in an article today online from the grocer.
Yeah.
And just then I can hear my phone vibrating from all the notifications we're getting from our orders. So it's just once someone kind of validates it, people are like, I'll try that. So yeah. It's just getting, you know, those influential people trying to try it first, whether that's through social media influencers or, you know, the grocer. It's just kind of making those first steps and getting kind of the right people to try it first.
Well, good for you. I'm sure all of us here and anybody listening.
You know how I see this? As the starter and then
so
a main course.
So popcorn to start and then the salmon as a main course.
No, the salmon is the starter, popcorn is to finish, especially this one.
You like that one.
And then you've got the sweet one for dessert.
Yeah, and you've got strawberry
with
and cream.
With 10 acre, we can provide you with a full meal. Start with chicken soup, then go on to sweet and sour or pastrami and rye, and then have something like strawberry and cream for dessert.
Popcorn. There you go. Well, good luck with it, Daniel. So that's Daniel Borson of Sea Chips. And if you're interested in that, you should have a look at it, because it is something genuinely different, which is quite difficult to say. c-chips.co.uk, and that's C as in swimming in the sea. c-chips.co.uk. And of course, 10 acre, you hardly need to go on the website because you can buy these things everywhere. But get on there's some good stuff on the site and it's good fun. Get engaged with the brand, it's great fun. And that's 10acrecrisps.co.uk. Thank you to Tony Goodman, because I know you're really busy, so I really appreciate you coming on to the radio. And then my dear friend Mirella Sula, who I'm hoping is going to be on our Tech Talk show, because you're obviously more involved in the sort of tech scene. But thanks for quickly popping in on your way through. And if you want to read about Mirella, that she's done so many things, it makes the rest of us look totally inferior. It's mirellasula.com. And you can read all about her and Global Women. So that's another programme, Guy. More food that we've eaten. Something
I'm stuffed
definitely
again.
Different, though.
Yeah, and that's what I love about this. There's so much interesting stuff happening in the food industry here in the UK, and we get to try it all first.
I know,
brilliant.
It's good, isn't it? So you've been listening to the Food Talk show, and we're now syndicated to dozens of radio stations across the UK and further afield, from California to the Kent coast. Thank you to Guy again, Guy Routledge of The Food Rush. And if you want to recommend any future guests, somebody who's doing something groundbreaking in the food sector, get in touch with us via Twitter, or you can just complain about Guy. I quite like that when that happens. at Food Talk Show, or you can listen to hundreds of podcasts now on foodtalk.co.uk. Have a good week. Bye from us.